Four decades after Ronald Reagan's landslide win in 1980, Jimmy Carter's one-term presidency is often labeled a failure. Indeed, many Americans view Carter as one of the only ex-presidents to have used the White House as a stepping stone to greater achievements. But in retrospect, according to our next guest, the Carter political odyssey is a rich and human story, marked by both formidable accomplishments and painful political adversity. In his deeply researched account, Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer Kai Bird unfolds the Carter saga as a tragic tipping point in American history. His new book is The Outlier, The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. Kai Bird is an award-winning historian and journalist, executive director of the Leon Levy Center for Biography. And again, the name of the new book is The Outlier, and we welcome Kai Bird to the roundtable this morning. Kai, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me. It's a pleasure.
What brought you to the concept, the idea of looking at President Carter as an outlier, and ultimately that idea of a presidency that was unfinished, of course, only 4 years, not eight?
Well, I liked the title a lot. It was my working title all along. I worked on this book for a little more than 6 years. And The Outlier seems to sort of capture this very distinctive politician. You know, he wasn't just an outsider. He was that. He was from South Georgia, the first president elected from the Deep South, just about forever. But he was also an outlier, and that conveys to me the notion that he was self-consciously deciding to be different. And that's very much Jimmy Carter. He's an outlier on race as a Southern white man from South Georgia. He just had a very liberal attitude about race growing up. He was an outlier in terms of his intelligence, his approach to politics, his religion, his born-again Christianity. And he's just a very self-contained, self-confident politician. And of course, you know, a very decent man. He has a moral center to him that we all recognize from his ex-presidency.
So do all of those things, they made up who he is, but they often spelled difficulty when it came to his governing.
Exactly, yeah. You know, Hunter Thompson, the great gonzo journalist of the 1960s and 70s, once described Carter as the meanest politician he'd ever met. Now, that's not a word that you normally associate with Jimmy Carter, mean, but he had a really relentless determination to win, to succeed, not to fail. And he would do anything necessary to achieve power. But once he was in power, once he won the governorship in Georgia, he declared on the day he was inaugurated that the time for segregation in the South was over, shocking his audience and his constituency. And he did the same thing with when he won the White House. He, you know, came very improbably from sort of nowhere to win the Democratic nomination and the presidency. And then once he was in the White House, he refused to do anything that was politically expedient. He wanted always to do the right thing. And of course, this got him into trouble, and he ended up alienating quite a few of his liberal Democratic constituencies, and alienating both people on the left and the right.
One of the points that you make in the book, however, is that while it can be forgotten, you make the case here in this volume that he actually got a lot done in his 4 years in office.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It's forgotten. But in those 4 years in the late 70s, he undoubtedly passed more legislation than, you know, let's say Obama, or more legislation than Bill Clinton or the Bushes. You know, and it's a long list ranging from, well, he opened the door for boutique beer industry all over the country. Every city in America now has its own brand of beer. Well, Jimmy Carter opened the door for that. He made it possible for middle-class Americans to fly on airplanes for the first time by deregulating the airline industry. he passed the Alaska Land Act, tripling the size of the nation's protected wilderness areas. He deregulated natural gas that eventually led to energy independence. He mandated seatbelts and airbags that saved, 9,000 American lives a year. And then on the foreign policy side of the equation, he, passed the Panama Canal Treaty, normalized relations with China, passed immigration reform, and made human rights the center of American foreign policy. So it's a long list.
Kai Bird is our guest. The name of the book is The Outlier, The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. You mentioned deregulating the airlines. That was really a huge deal. Give us a sense of how that came about.
He's hard to sort of define as a politician. Is he liberal? Is he conservative? He campaigned, on his own integrity. He campaigned as Jimmy Carter, the man. But once he got into office, he had a fairly liberal social agenda, and he appointed dozens of Ralph Naderites, acolytes of the consumer protection advocate Ralph Nader. And among other things, he decided that the airline industry, the trucking industry, the railroad industry, all had to, were encumbered with too much bureaucracy and red tape, and they should be deregulated. And in the case of the airlines, this broke the monopoly of a handful of airlines and allowed real free competition. And that, of course, led to the expansion of the industry and price cuts so that, middle-class Americans could fly. It was a significant achievement.
How he wins in 1976 is basically those who support him, that support erodes over the 4 years, and Ronald Reagan, the Republican, makes the case very effectively that this guy is a big government liberal, which really goes against what you were just saying.
Yeah. In fact, Jimmy Carter had a sort of small town South Georgia attitude on conserving the budget. He wanted to balance the budget. He was very careful about spending money. He wasn't a big time liberal spender. He would spend money on poor people. He expanded the roles of the food stamp program, for instance, adding 3 million people to it. But he was very wary of big government and big spending. And he was a Southern populist. He had a sort of prejudice against big corporations. He wanted to try to reform the tax code. It was one of his failures, though, because he got opposition both from conservatives and liberals. But yeah, he was a social liberal, but a budgetary conservative. So it's hard, again, to pin him down.
You really do make the point in the book that the part of the problem for him politically is that he told them a lot of things, Americans, that perhaps they didn't want to hear, that there were problems with this country that needed to be fixed. And even within his own party, he was alienating a lot of people if he thought what he was doing was in the public good.
Right. Yeah, so, he had a triumph of personal diplomacy at Camp David, where he brought Egypt and Israel to a peace treaty. And it's all due to Jimmy Carter's personal diplomacy, 13 days at Camp David, where he brought Anwar Sadat of Egypt and Menachem Begin of Israel to Camp David and literally sort of lobbied them personally to sign a peace treaty called the Camp David Accords. And this, got Egypt off the battlefield for Israel. But he got little political credit for this. And though he won the Jewish vote in 1976 by 72%, he lost it in 1980. The Jewish Americans sort of regarded him with some suspicion because of the pressure he wanted to exert on Israel to stop building settlements in the West Bank, which, of course, turns out to be a very prescient position. Similarly, he alienated labor unions because he opposed Ted Kennedy's national health insurance bill because he thought it was too expensive. He tried to do the right thing and was trying to avoid anything, as I said, that smacked of political expediency. So he hated pork barrel projects and would veto pork barrel bills in Congress. This, of course, alienated some of his liberal congressmen who should have been on his side. But he dug his own hole politically in some ways.
The famous Millay speech that was given in July of 1979, you point out in the book he never used that word, malaise.
Right. You know, if you read it today, that speech is just remarkable. It's a very unusual sermon, literally a sermon where he addresses the American people. This is in the midst of the energy crisis where there are long gas lines and energy crisis had been caused by the Iranian Revolution. And it was a temporary shortage of gasoline, but it was a shock to most Americans having to spend more than a dollar a gallon. And anyway, he, in the Millay speech, he said, you know, you've got to understand that America is a country of limits. We can't just destroy the environment. He's talking about climate change and environmental concerns. And but also in a spiritual sense, he warned people that, you know, you can't find happiness in simple material goods. You have to think about the community and not just the individual. He was speaking as a prophet and really speaking from the heart. And in retrospect, it was prescient and smart speech. Of course, he got, again, no political credit for it. The polls after that speech went up by 10 points, but a week later he fired five of his cabinet secretaries, and this sort of was regarded as an indication of his political chaos inside the White House, and his poll numbers went down again.
And the speech was given just 10 days after the Camp David retreat, so you're coming off a pretty good news cycle at that point.
Right. It's an unusual moment in American history. The first time, really, that an American president had sort of subjected himself to a very introspective seminar over 10 days where he called religious leaders to Camp David, business leaders, labor union leaders, philosophers, book authors, to sit down and talk to him about the problems in the country and what they thought he was doing wrong. And here was Jimmy Carter dressed in jeans, sitting cross-legged on the carpet on the floor, taking notes with a yellow legal pad. It was seen as not very presidential, but, you know, this is Jimmy Carter. He's very down to earth in some respects, intelligent and willing to listen to criticism.
You write in the book quite beautifully about his upbringing. You say the defining mystery of the future president's childhood was how he nevertheless was molded into something quite alien from his South Georgian racist culture. Did you figure that out in talking to him and researching the book?
I had many interviews with him, but I also spent months and months in the presidential archives in Atlanta. And I went down to Plains and also Archer, the little hamlet where he actually grew up as a boy, right, about 2 miles down the road from Plains. You see Plains and Archer, it's a throwback to the 19th century. You know, this is a boy who grew up on a farm which his father owned, several thousand acres. But he was the only white boy in town in Archer. All his playmates were African Americans. The mules pulled wooden plows. It was a very primitive experience. His house didn't have running water or electricity until he was a teenager. He grew up in literally in something that was akin to the 19th century in South Georgia. And it was a very segregated society. I mean, his father believed in white supremacy and supported the norms of a segregated society. But Jimmy's father was very different from his mother. His mother, you recall, was Miss Lillian.
Right.
And many Americans remember her from her hilarious visits to the Johnny Carson show and other talk shows where she would entertain us with her one-liners. She was a classic sort of Southern eccentric woman who broke all the rules and didn't believe in segregation and actually imbued her son with a sense that African Americans and whites were equal. Jimmy got his racial sensibilities from his mother, Miss Lillian, and not the father. He was sort of regarded as a harsh disciplinarian in his life.
I know seeing that the boyhood home, it does give you this idea of growing up in poverty, which was not necessarily the case because of the move to Plains, right? And it was different, and they did have a business.
Yeah, the Carters were probably the wealthiest people in town.
Right.
They owned several thousand acres. Jimmy's father was a good businessman, although he never finished high school. Yeah, so he was sort of land rich and cash poor. And, he still lives in Plains. He's 96 years old, yep. And he still lives in the same very simple four-bedroom ranch house that he had built in 1960. And he lives a very Spartan, plain life, and it's still working hard at the Carter Center, dedicated to wiping out guinea worm disease and trying to bring peace to the Middle East. But I argue in the book that, if people think that Jimmy Carter is a great ex-president, they should remember that it's a seamless story. He's the same guy as ex-president that he was when he was in the White House. And he should be regarded as actually not only one of the most decent men to have occupied the Oval Office, but also one of the most intelligent and hardworking.
With what you just said, since 1980, really, he has been working on that, of the unfinished presidency, of many of the things that he started in office. Of course, he doesn't have the power of the presidency. But it does seem, in your writing, that it was a very, very much planned and disciplined idea of what he wanted to accomplish in his post-presidency.
Oh, yes. Unlike any of the other ex-presidents we've experienced in the last 50 years, Carter had a very serious agenda. And it's an agenda that grew out of his 4 years in the White House. It includes a foreign policy. He has worked assiduously for Middle East peace, trying to bring Israelis and Palestinians together. And again, it's very controversial. He wasn't afraid to wade into this issue like he wasn't afraid to do it when he was in the White House. But for instance, in 2007, he wrote another book. He's the author of over 30 books. He wrote a book in 2007 about the Middle East in which the title included the word apartheid. And this, of course, was extremely controversial because he seemed to be implying that Israel was heading down the path towards an apartheid state. And of course, he got a lot of criticism for this, but all these many years later, that fear that Israel was going down a road to that would close off the option of a two-state solution and was continuing to build settlements and occupy the Palestinians who have no voting rights, no self-determination. Well, it's beginning to look like apartheid. So he's, again, being very prescient. And again, he worked very hard to work on health care issues in Africa and Asia, trying to wipe out guinea worm disease and other diseases that afflict the developing world. Yeah, he's very admirable and relentless, but always an outlier.
the name of the book is The Outlier, and it is so beautifully written and such an amazing work of history. The subtitle of the book is The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. It is published by Crown. Kai Bird, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you for providing the beautiful book, and I thank you so much for spending your time with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
Again, the name of the book is The Outlier, The Unfinished Presidency of Jimmy Carter. The book is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.